As long as he doesn't say the F word. No, which you're doing great on your goal, by the way, so far.
So far. So
really, you're doing awesome. Really good.
I'm just sitting over here going, don't say F, don't say F, don't say F, don't say F. Oh,
that was four times. So cool. Okay. Good.
Great. Welcome in to season 3, episode 8 of Unstable Discourse.
Fist pump. Hey. Fist pump.
Sleep eating.
Sleep eating.
Chris, what is the deal with your sleep eating? That's where we're going to start today.
Wow, that did not catch that coming.
Yeah. Surprise.
So apparently, when I was a kid, I used to sleepwalk, and my dad would find me like dressed in the car ready to go. At least that's what I'd say when he'd get there. I'm ready to go. That's like literally what he said I said. So then as I got older, I started waking up in various states of undress.
This is going to be a great episode.
Yeah.
Listeners, we're back at the Callahan Acres basement. The cab again is fully loaded. It's me, Alex Seminary of Disc Golf Chicago, here with Ryan Fancher of Unstable Disc Golf Gear.
Yes, sir.
Sean Callahan of Delwood Disc Golf.
Good evening.
Jason Callahan of Bag of Tricks.
I still don't know how eating played into the story that he said earlier.
It's okay, we'll get to it.
We'll get there. And we're joined by Chris Sprague.
Oh,
can I say your last name the right way?
Sprague.
Sprague.
Okay. So close.
Yeah. I was really close. I gave it everything I could.
Yeah.
Is there an H in there? A niner?
Yeah.
Niner.
Tough walkie-talkie.
And Chris, you've got, just like our last guest, you've got a long list of credentials. You've been in the sport for, well, you're OG, so you've been playing for 25-plus years. You are in the Iowa Disc Golf Hall of Fame. Semi-recently inducted, or when was that?
Last year.
Okay, so that's new.
Totally recently.
You are an Innova brand ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
You are the course designer of Camden 2. And there's more things on the list that I'm leaving off. Is there anything that you really want people to know is also on the list?
He's sleeping.
Sleep eating.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I wake up and... No. one of the... Like I said, I've done a lot. Disc golf on the course, it's always proud. You know, it's all individual accomplishment at the end of the day. It's very rare that you can give other people recreation, which is what Camden 2 kind of is my big claim to fame, is being able to give other people recreation. That's exciting. But I was able to, I was invited to do a demo for the billionaire in Georgia at the 2006 World Championships. Pete May, who's the National Barrel Racing Association president at the time, he was a...
National Barrel Racing?
Association president, and he's
Hold on. You're skipping past the... What's barrel racing?
Oh, rodeo. You've never seen that? Horses rodeo, and they race and circle around barrels, and have to come back.
I was picturing people in barrels.
In barrels? Racing. Yeah. Trying to get down the hill fast.
Like a soapbox.
Like sack races?
Barrel racing.
Yeah. Like those cartoons when you don't have any clothes, you have the barrel with the suspenders.
With the suspenders over your shoulder.
Okay.
If only I woke up like that.
Yeah, right. That's great. Okay. Well, you do have a long list of credentials. We'll get into that when we get to the bangers and mash. And before we get to sort of the main juice of this episode, which is going to be, we're going to be talking about course design. We're going to be talking about being a leader in the community. And there was one other really important point. I mentioned it in the post. Anybody remember what it was? You're definitely going to edit this out.
It's in here somewhere. It's in here somewhere.
Why did you keep that in?
Oh, it was so funny. Yeah. I was cutting it and cutting it and cutting it. And then I was like, oh, I forgot he did that. Yep, no, leave it all in.
Is it here somewhere?
It was funny.
If you're not singing songs through your issues, what are you doing?
Yeah, you missed it.
All right. So once we get to the bangers and mash, we're going to be talking about your being a leader in the disc golf community. We're going to talk about course design, and we're going to talk about managing relationships with the park district, which is something we've talked a lot about this season, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm excited to get into all of that. Before we do, I want to ask, I'm going to introduce something new.
Ooh.
Surprise. I didn't tell anybody.
Surprise. We didn't discuss this beforehand.
I know. Sorry.
Did you let your producer know?
Yeah.
Sorry,
had
Sheila.
A writer.
What? Oh, my God. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Sheila, no surprises. Can I introduce a new writer. Segment, please?
Tell him no.
I'll allow it.
She said yes.
Okay. BDE for her to be like, you know what?
I want to set goals for this episode.
Ooh.
My goal for the episode is to say the word awesome less.
Oh, after, it would be awesome if you did that.
After listening back to one of the other episodes the other day, I was like, I say awesome like 40 times an episode.
Well, you've already
like
said it twice. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
You're going to screw up a few drinking
I'm
games.
Working on cutting that out.
Right. Okay. Well, now we're going to count them.
Ryan,
so.
Yeah. Give me a goal for this episode. Not for me. I mean, for you like or for the show or...
You skip me. How do you do that?
Johnny on the spot.
Yeah. I can't do that.
I'm gonna try to swear a little bit less.
Ooh. Yeah.
You know what?
A little bit.
The it's Newmans hard. Are usually on the Sean track.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what all those are?
Yeah. They're Seinfeld Newmans.
Each season, Ryan has found a different sound to cover up the F.
Yeah, but you get so passionate about what you're saying that
I thought
yeah,
you guys just had a really clean show.
No, it's just funnier to me. Squeaky, squeaky. So that's why.
Cover them up with Newmans and Michael.
Okay. That's so a
swearing
great,
less.
That's a
swearing
great,
a little bit less.
Great goal.
A little bit less.
A little bit.
Jason, on the spot. It doesn't have to be something you're going to do. It can be something that you hope happens today.
I hope we hit a point in this episode where I have to get up and walk around.
Oh. That's your goal. Oh. You got to cause it.
There we go.
Yes.
Now you spark some interest in me.
Okay, now Jason's goal is to make me get up and walk around.
Make you get up and walk around.
That's fine.
Good luck.
That's
fair. Help me God if I got to walk up behind you and drag you by the armpits.
Okay. Going it's fine. It better be funny.
All right, Chris, you're last, so you've had more time to think about it than anybody.
I wasn't. Was I supposed to?
You are now.
I wasn't listening. What was that?
My goal. Started recording. I don't know if you figured that out.
Yeah.
My goal is to not talk about peeing Lon's side of the bed.
Okay.
And why I don't sleep with other disc golfers when I travel.
All right.
Or wear boxers to bed or drink too much.
Belle. Oh. Oh. Why did you kiss my ear? Why are you holding my hand? Where's your other hand? Between two pillows. Those aren't pillows.
There you go.
None of that really happened.
Got stuff to talk about when we get to the
recipes for disaster.
Yeah.
Well, I woke up on his pillow. He was like, oh, I thought my girlfriend was with me. And I was like, oh, I thought I was with my girlfriend. had the same thought.
I got some serious sleeping issues.
Yeah.
Oh, I just don't like to share beds anymore.
Yeah.
A different kind of wetness.
Yeah.
Speaking of, let's get to it. What is with the sleep eating?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I used to live with my cousin Matt, and he would catch me making salads in the middle of the night. Like, not just an ordinary salad. Like,
we talking
like
Caesar?
Chop
salad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like intricate. You weren't just like fumbling with lettuce.
And
you
I had knives out.
Fumbling with lettuce. That's good.
And then I would.
Ryan, sometime, where are you going? Oh my God. You're walking around the room.
Nope. So nice try.
That was it. I'll try.
Check. Done.
And then I'd occasionally wake up like with one sock on and a blanket over me that I didn't have the night before. So
I'm just picturing Step Brothers where they both wake up in the middle of the night. Do all absolutely. Crazy stuff.
Pillows in the oven.
They're throwing Christmas presents.
What's the comedian that talks about sleepwalking all the time?
Mike Birbiglia?
Mike Birbiglia.
Oh, yeah. No, I actually stole my laptop once, allegedly. So I woke up at my roommate finds me, and again, I have a blanket that I didn't go to bed with. And I went to bed with clothes on. So I wake up and I have this blanket on me and I have no clothes on. And he's like, wow, you were really having a night. And then I can't find my computer, so I turn it into my company. I'm like, oh, man, somebody stole my laptop. Well, we find my computer in the alley, in the trash, my laptop bag. So allegedly, potentially, I was able to manage my way out to my car, then get out to the alley, all naked, mind you. And then I don't think any of this happened. Number one, my earbuds and my change was all missing. Yeah. So at the end of the day, I'm going to go ahead. The benefit of the doubt goes to the player. Sure, I woke up naked.
Flies everywhere.
Sure, I slept walks. I don't think I stole my own laptop.
Earbuds and laptop sound semi-recent. When did this? Because the story sounds like it should have been
in my college years.
Yeah, this is in 1986 because there's earbuds involved. So
this was 2018.
Damn.
Oh, okay.
Still going hard.
Yeah.
Still going hard. Really not that I go hard. It's just that I have a limit on where it's just a sleepwalking thing.
Yeah.
So the alcohol.
Do you have sleep paralysis or anything weird like that?
I have had that where you fall asleep too early. I quickly fall asleep and then you're paralyzed and your cousin's standing over and you're like, you can't move or yell.
Can't move. All I can do
I'm
is
not
go.
Saying it was my cousin standing over me, but it's probably him.
Yeah. No, the cousin thing is in the DSM definition of sleep
paralysis. Yeah, there's definitely
you're not actually involved. Paralyzed while you're sleeping, yeah, unless a cousin is there.
Right. Exactly. Mine was either that or a ninja. Yeah, I had ninjas a lot, but we talked about the B movies, and that makes sense.
This has been fantastic. Not awesome, but
wow. Fantastic. I have experience. Ooh, well done. Thank you. You did say it, so that's three.
Yeah.
But
no, listen, I'm just going to count them.
All right. I appreciate it.
And it was you're like, you guys all have sleep paralysis.
Sean and I do, yeah. We've experienced
them. Haven't had it in a long time. Yeah. But
absolutely most terrifying. I will now.
But we have. Our dad experiences it, and so do we as well. It has been a while, but.
Is this your father fall off a ladder too?
Yeah. Okay. Whoa. Nice.
Yeah.
Ryan, sit down. Ryan, where are you going? Oh, my God. It's happened twice so far.
I think my favorite line from one of the shows was, are they going to climb up on a ladder and hold the banner?
Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear more about the sleep paralysis, but I think we can get into that a little bit later. Until then, this has been a very long start to the episode.
It's fine.
Mm-hmm. We have delayed Fired Up too long, so it's time for Fired Up.
Fired Up.
Ooh. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you can
are
say
we
it.
Counting them if you say it?
You can say it as many times as I want.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I was referencing when I said that?
Sounded like Olmec.
Nope.
Damn.
It Chris? Did sound like Olmec.
Uh-oh. That was an Altered Beast reference.
Altered Beast.
Oh, say it again.
Sega Genesis.
That perked my ears up for some reason.
The best. Power up.
Power up.
Power up.
Yeah. Possibly Fire the sure. best arcade game ever.
Oh, God. Yeah. So good.
The zooming when you were like, zzz, you would like,
and like the lightning would turn him into a werewolf.
That was the first game where I'd ever like heard somebody speak. Like all the games I played prior.
Sure, it was just all 8-bit.
You know, there was just noises and shit.
What was it like? I'm sorry.
Boing and blink and bloop. Bink and bleep.
Okay, got it.
I'll even do the stupid hand motions I was doing when I did it for some reason. I don't know why I do that shit. Oh, there we go.
No,
oh,
almost.
So close.
Ooh, actually, before I start asking you guys what you're fired up about, I did forget to mention that we are joined, of course, by the Queen of the Canyons and producer of the show, Sheila Callahan. And now, Sean.
Yes, sir.
What are you fired up about? Hold on. Ryan looks offended.
No, it's fine. Ryan, no, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I can wait.
No.
Why were you offended then?
What? Get to me later. Go.
He still wants to be asked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
He's got a lot of feelings.
I'm stoked for the event this weekend. You know, Delwood and the Masters of the Canyons. First time ever, 40 plus Masters players coming out, including Mr. Sprague.
Hey,
and, you know, I'm really excited for what is to come. We always have really great stories that come from these events. At Tournament Central, we're sitting there watching scores. I mean, we know a lot of these guys and some of them are out of town or so. I'm just excited for all the stories and the play and everybody coming back and just being stoked about doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot of that. Hopefully. I think, you know, weather's good. Everything that we don't have control over is looking pretty solid. So I think we're going to make a pretty good time.
Yeah.
Booyah. I'm excited about the trophies. I still don't know what they are, but I have an idea of what they might be. And I'm excited to see
those. We can talk about it because this will air after the
event. Please.
Yes.
But I had originally thought that I was going to find He-Man figurines. And we're going to still use the same plaques, but maybe attach the figurines to them. Uh-huh. But it turns out every figurine is now
$2,000.
Yeah, they're all exorbitantly expensive because people think that they are now vintage toys, even though most of them are just garbage, right? Mm-hmm. So every He-Man figurine I tried to find was too expensive. But I did manage to find an eBay listing for three full sets of Topps brand He-Man playing cards. Or not, I'm sorry, not playing cards, trading cards.
Trading cards, yeah.
But these trading cards are a series of cards that kind of they almost read like a comic book in order.
Oh, cool.
But they all have pictures of, you know, the cartoon, and they feel like they are from the early 80s. They are very vintage feeling. And so on these plaques,
they smell.
Yeah, they smell old, right?
They smell like
grandma's basement.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Made of asbestos.
Yeah, and so on each of the plaques, there is a space for, you know, a trading card, plastic sleeve, and each player that receives a trophy will get one of those cards in that. So
very cool.
Yeah, it's just something different. And
oh, that's great.
yeah, a little bit nostalgic, and the age range kind of fits a lot of the people that, like we talked about before, yeah, that would appreciate that. So that's all.
I don't think 40-year-old John Cleveland was playing with He-Man, though.
Yeah, but now 40. Yeah, yeah, but a lot of the 40 to 50-year-olds still remember that. You know, yeah, that whole time frame. So.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I was a big He-Man kid. My mom just for last Christmas got me He-Man and Skeletor figurine.
Yeah, He-Man's when I learned about steroids, because the figurines were jacked.
Yeah.
Yes, they were.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the battle damage ones?
Where you hit them and it switched in the chest?
Oh, yeah. Actually had a little gash on his chest.
See? He knows. See? Chris Sprague knows. So, obviously, we did something right. So, yeah, they're going to be cool.
No, I love it.
Can't wait.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
You got to win one now.
I shaved my eyebrows.
Okay, so are you doing?
We saw that.
Are you doing the trading cards in first, second, and third? All of the trophies?
Yeah, they will be on all of the trophies. Cool. Yeah, so all of the 39 or 40 trophies that we've made.
All right, Ryan, what are you fired up about?
Nothing. I'm just kidding. two things. I'm gonna revisit because season 4 of Alone, which I am on now. So do the math on how much I've watched it since the last time I talked about it.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's a lot of episodes, yeah.
Season 4 is couples.
That's what I was going to ask. Yes.
And I'm only 2 episodes in, but they are having a rough go because they drop these people off on Vancouver Island again. But they drop these couples off 10 miles apart, give or take. And one has a camp to set up and the other one has a destination heading and a compass. And they have to find each other and then try and live out, you know, as long as they can. And no couple has found the other yet. And it is just, it's chaos. And I can't wait to watch the rest of it.
So spoiler alert, has everybody seen the Jordan season?
Oh, I have. That is one that I started with.
That'll hook you for life.
It's unbelievable. I think that's season 6.
All I can say is, without spoiling too much, is he takes down a Wolverine by hand. That's all I can say. And beyond that, that's just one little tiny thing.
I feel like
he
did. That was all the information.
That is no, it's better. There's way more. There's way more. If that doesn't draw you in,
Michael Jordan versus Wolverine.
Yeah.
Right, he has this like little ongoing feud with these Wolverines that keeps stealing his fat.
Yeah, he has a stand that he has built way up. To,
I'm just
like,
saying,
store
this guy next levels alone.
Yeah.
Everybody else goes out there, cramps up on day 3. He's out there laughing on day 90, wondering if he'll go another 90. He is literally living and thriving.
Awesome. Laughing. Jordan, we are not.
His name's Jordan.
Okay.
His name is Jordan. He's fantastic. Okay. Best mindset. If you want to learn about disc golf or golf, mental aspects of anything, just watch that episode. Watch how he grinds through the hardest things that you've ever imagined. Yeah. And then it's fantastic.
Just works it through.
It makes those rainy rounds feel like nothing.
Yeah. We're so, not battling Wolverines here.
Yeah. So that's great. Can't wait to watch that.
I thought you said rat battling Wolverines. I said like two Wolverines better. Like doing this.
Mom spaghetti. Yeah.
I wish he would have said that.
Yeah. And then the other thing quick is that I dropped my wife and child off at the airport yesterday and they are spending a week in Austin, Texas with family. And if I can learn to now, while I'm by myself, not work constantly every minute that I am home because I have no distractions, if I can learn to enjoy that for just a few minutes at a time, I will be absolutely stoked. But
I'm sitting across the table from you and there's a tiredness in your eyes.
And a learning curve in your future.
Yeah. It's been a long time. Yeah. So hopefully we'll get through this weekend.
We're going to go golf with Eric Bleetner on Monday.
Sweet. See, we've already got stuff lined up.
Two rounds.
So we're going to go do that stuff. I'm just excited to be a bachelor for a couple days. That's weird to say, but.
Dude, you have all this time to go long thumb and you haven't thought about that once, have you?
I can't.
I don't even know what a long thumb is.
We will get into it.
Yeah.
Because we've had Masters of the Canyons coming up. I've had to prep for that.
Yeah, I haven't played. I haven't played since.
We're just talking about going to a field.
I have been playing in the back a lot.
Have you been practicing what we learned last episode?
Totally.
Awesome. Oh, damn it.
That's 4.
Number 4. Damn
it. Yeah.
I can't wait to put a little bing every time he does it.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
Awesome. Yeah. Just like, just go power up.
Yeah, right. Anyway, that's all. That's all I had.
J-Man, what are you fired up about?
A-Man, let me tell you. I had, there was something that I was fired up about on the last episode that I wasn't able to get to. And I'm going to get to it on today's episode. Have you guys watched Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers on Disney Plus yet?
Ryan's no, walking around. Ryan, is it?
No. Oh, that no, that totally counts, dude. Just because you're getting a Rice Krispie treat. No, that counts. Nope.
But you didn't get me one.
Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers.
Wait, this does count because you started, you're fired up, and Ryan
he
thought,
got up and
Ryan
walked thought, around.
This
that
means
totally
I can leave.
Freaking counts.
You yes. drove him away from the table. Yes. This counts.
I'm going to cut it all out.
Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers on Disney Plus is hands down one of the best movies I've seen in the last decade. It is phenomenal.
Come on, Chris, dude.
He says this about every movie.
I'm telling. Just so you know. Oh my god, that crow is going to be so delicious when you little guys history finally here eat will it, help. And then you're like, "Holy shit, dude!" I'm telling you,
no,
it is everything you wanted Roger Rabbit to be and more.
Ooh,
it exists in a world where cartoons are real, and because it's Disney, they have access to everything nowadays.
Yeah.
And it's all in there and will all blow your mind. There are cameos of characters that you haven't thought about in years that you're like, oh my God. There's a cameo that will absolutely blow your mind that was like, the internet went crazy for it when it happened. I'm telling you, well acted, well written, well drawn. I cannot say enough about it.
Who does the voices of Chip and Dale?
Is it John Mulaney? Yeah. And Andy Samberg.
That's Andy two Samberg, great
are
choices.
Chip and Dale. Yep. And it takes place in a world where the cartoon that we grew up watching existed, but they were actors on that cartoon.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Now they're like semi washed up. One of them kind of just got a 9-to-5 job, and the other one's still trying to make it all happen and doing the con circuit.
It's better than
it
I was
will
expecting.
Blow your mind.
It's like it's got BoJack Horseman vibes.
Seth Rogen's a voice. It's
all right, let's go watch it. Come on,
out
guys.
Of this world, fantastic. I'm telling you.
All right,
watch
I'm
it.
I'm intrigued.
If I'm wrong, I will pay you for the time you wasted watching.
When
that
you said
movie.
Washed up, I just pictured Better Off
bucks
Dead.
Go and enjoy it.
Yeah,
remember the old Better Off Dead with.
And I'm serious as a heart attack.
All right,
I'll give you $20 if you tell me you did not like that movie.
All right,
is fantastic.
I'll give it a shot.
I can't see myself bothering to watch that.
I'm telling you,
but this is what you can do while you're relaxing this week.
It's $20.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
Gambling on a movie? Absolutely not.
Come on.
If I have time, I will be outside.
He has low risk tolerance.
No, thank you.
Right now, Clayton Biofis is listening to this episode, and he's like freaking out because he's like, "Yes, Jason, I've watched it too, and it's great, and I loved it." And he's right. And no. You guys are all wrong.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk to him, or why did you choose him as a reference?
No, because
they were having an in-depth discussion about invasive species, and movies came up.
He would agree with loving that movie. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm telling you.
Nope.
Well, you've sold it very hard, so now
I'm telling you.
If I watch it and it's not that good, it's really going to damage your credibility.
It is laugh out loud funny. It's not just like, oh, that's funny. There will be points in that movie where you will find yourself.
I'm not doubting because I'm a big Mulaney.
We will do a bonus episode where we shit all over Jason if it is not.
That's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll just stand there and take it like a man.
Good.
Because I'm a man of my word.
Okay. Good.
Well, Chris, what animated movie are you fired up for?
Semi-animated.
Shrek 5.
Roger Rabbit still. I should move on. My fired up, obviously I'm fired up about Tim Selinski Masters Championship coming to the Quad Cities. That's an easy one for me. But I'm really fired up about all these Iowa kids playing golf and at the highest level and just killing it. Gannon Burr, Gavin Babcock, Team Iron Line guy. Ben Calloway is still out there. Yeah, I saw
10
the ace.
Uh-huh.
Insane. So I'm excited for them. I've been like kind of living vicariously through them and watching, you know. Because, you know, Gannon's kind of in that weird spot. He's 16. He's on the tour. 17. He's on the tour that I was on at 31.
Wow.
And I average a 10.58. He's averaging, you know, I got second to Memorial in my 06 tour. And all these things are going well for me. And he's out there in a pool of big fish. There's always big fish. It's just we didn't have a pool of big. And we had really big fish. Big fish. Now there's just big fish everywhere. And a few really big fish. There's so many. The pool's very dangerous to be in, and they're doing it. It's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You averaged a 10.58?
Yeah, one weekend at the Memorial after I moved to Oregon. I was living with Dave Felberg and Avery Jenkins, playing all winter long, training with people that were kind of, you know, it's hard to play with people that are that much better than you.
I find that to not be a problem for me.
As do I.
Yeah, but it makes you hungry, makes you want to play better, makes you want to try harder. And then I didn't realize how good I was doing. And suddenly, like, you know, people at the time were like, your putter never hit the ground, you know, and it's funny how the better you get, the more you expect, the harder it gets. Mm-hmm. I was at that point where I wanted a lot. And here I was pushing Barry and pressing him. And I end up we're several strokes ahead of everybody. And I had biggest win, $2,700. But then I look at what Gannon's doing. And I'm like, man, he's averaging these 10.57. He was just
speaking of putting, him. Like he is.
It's unreal.
Yeah. Lights out.
It's unreal. It reminds me of times where I was in my game, but he has another like 10, 15 feet on my range that I just never had. And I'm like that. And that confidence, that ability, I had a low risk tolerance at 31. I don't think at 17 that comes into play yet, you know? So he's able to run things that I'm like, but I say that and I'm playing Masters and these guys are running things and I'm laying up and I feel it like an idiot.
So Iowa disc golf is hot right now.
Yeah, it's neat. It's really neat.
Those two are both going to be at Clash too. So
Babcock is on the wait list. I'm going to do, obviously, I may pull some strings.
We'll see what happens.
You know some, you know, I'm you know a guy.
You are the strings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just pulling myself.
Yeah.
That's not what we came here for.
Oh, shit.
Jackie like, just groaned at your joke.
Is this where you guys insert the Noonan stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No. As long as he doesn't say the F word. No, but you're doing great on your goal, by the way, so far.
So far.
Really, you're doing awesome at it. Really good.
I'm just sitting over here going, don't say Noonan, don't say Noonan, don't say Noonan, don't say Noonan.
That was four times, so cool. Okay, good.
Great.
Everybody
Hey, Alex.
Hey, call him Amen.
Hey, can we get to the Calahander or? No, I'm sorry. What are you fired up about?
Thank you. One should have been one of my fired ups from last week, but I don't remember if I made the announcement or not yet. But I'm fired up about two things. One is Devin Hernandez. He is Disc Golf Chicago's first sponsored player. We decided to give it a whirl and like, why not just support somebody who's doing all the things that we think are right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who's really... I'm making hand gestures right now and everybody's mocking
very funny.
Hand gestures.
I'm confused by them.
They're really awesome hand gestures.
I was imagining fake boobs in front of you and that's what
I thought you were milking a cow.
You grab a boob and it feels like a bag of sand.
Yeah, right.
You know? 40-year-old virgin. All right, let's keep going. It's Devin Hernandez is our first sponsored player. We're really excited about that. And I mean, I want to do more of that over time, but we're a nonprofit with not a lot of funds. So starting one at a time, and I think he's the perfect choice for us. We're really, really about inclusivity and trying to make the sport accessible to everybody. Anytime somebody comes out to one of our events, Devin is the most welcoming. He makes everybody feel good about what they're doing. He makes everybody feel like they're a friend right away. And he loves to play and he shows up and goes the extra mile. He goes to the schools and like works with the kids. And we just couldn't be more proud of what he's doing. And we're very excited to have our logo on his chest. So, you know, really, really fired up about that and looking forward to whoever the next person will be. And we're going to take our time with that.
Intense eye contact from Devin Hernandez.
He's really with you when
he's
you're
like
with
a painting where like the eyes are like, bro, quit.
But I just think he's just so present with you. Like he's not somewhere else in his head. Like a lot of people are like,
right.
When he's with you, he is like, dude, you and I are here in this moment right now. And I love that.
About him.
I'm trying to tell you I'm with you. When I say I'm with you, I don't mean it like an expression, like I'm saying, I know what you mean. I mean, I'm with you.
How does that work with a 503C when you're sponsoring a player?
I don't know.
Because I know there's like, you can't donate, say, like what Ricky ran into where he's donating to an individual to try to help him with health and costs and everything. That Kansas City incident where the kid was shot and, you know, Ricky tried to help, but the 503C is like, okay, there's certain rules. I don't know sponsoring a player if you have to.
That might be a thing that I just.
If it's just merchandise or it's not
we're
financial.
All we're doing right now is covering a couple of his tournament entries this year and making sure he looks good at tournaments. If there's some rules about sponsoring in 501c3s, I sure as hell don't know about it.
I'm not here for consulting or law. Yeah. You know, I literally don't play one on
Sprague
TV.
Law.
If there's any haters out there that want to get us in trouble, this might be your opportunity to report something to somebody, but I don't know. I'm sure it's not a big deal.
Why would you give them that opportunity?
Yeah.
I'm going to stay
It's almost like I'm
calling. If anybody wants to punch somebody, right. I mean, you can punch me in the face. You shouldn't, but you can.
Yeah, right.
If you want to, you won't.
I'm staying ahead of it.
And then the other thing is John Rigoni. Mm-hmm. You've talked to John, right? Mm-hmm. John is a local dude to the Joliet area, and he has recently, he's been working on an app for bag tags. I think he's been working on it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's available to use right now. Basically, you can download the app. I think it's on Apple and Android. And basically, you put your scores in there, and it'll tell you like who's tagging out where. It'll keep track of every tag position that you've had over the course of a season. It's set up to be used casually by individuals or by like league you know, directors. So you can, as a league, you know, pay whatever the fee is. I think it's only a couple bucks. And then everybody in the league can like tag out automatically and keep track of all the stats you've had over the course of the league.
That's a great feature.
I think it's just a really cool thing that somebody local is doing something new. Yeah,
that's a long time coming. That's cool.
I had,
why doesn't UDisc have that already?
Yeah, right.
I had an idea to get away from the problems with bag tags. So, you know, a lot of people, they get the number one tag and they camp out. You never see them for a year. Right. It just seems very odd. You know, it tends to elicit a lot of things that you don't like about the bag tag. Yeah. So I had this idea to how to get away from that. And that's the idea that you don't get points for a one tag or two tag or whatever. You have it was basically a string or a fish. So the more people you played with, you can only get points for a tag once. So you had to get rid of that tag. And if you won, you got first dibs at tags. And since you were trying to gather these different fish, these different tags, you're benefited by getting different tags than what you already had.
Oh, that's so cool.
It pushed you to play with new players. To get away from your usual group of people, to not hide out with a one tag because you only point on it once. You get that big fish, you get your points, but now you got to go out and get the number two or the number three or the number four, and you want to get that stringer. And at the end of the week, you turn in your stringer. So if you get a few lower end ones that aren't worth as much, no big deal, but you're trying to push. Mm-hmm. It takes the right group of people or the right app to track it. So that's really why we never did it. And I don't play enough casual to really push it, but with the right group of people, it's a fantastic way to get away from those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really didn't like tags for those negative reasons. I liked it for the social aspects, but it just kind of devolves a lot. So if you get the right group of people and the right attitude, you can do something really special with it and actually turn it into something where you're playing with new people.
See, Very cool. I always wanted to integrate something where you would get playing card.
Nice.
For placing or whatever. You got first choice, kind of like you choose a tag, and every week you would get a different playing card. And when you got five cards, you would reveal your hand, and whoever had the best hand, you know, at the end of the season or whatever, would get like a bonus, you know, cash payout or you know, like a
poker run.
Yeah, absolutely. And that may be a good way to do that.
We're going to do it with fishing lures. So you had these different fishing lures that were kind of numbered or whatever. And people would just, the idea was if we did this as a club, we'd just all bring in a lure to join. So you'd be able to like kind of contribute your flair to it.
That's super lure. Cool.
That take
that's
the hooks cool. off, you know.
Yeah.
You hope it rattles. So you'd be like working your partners. You know, that kind of fun stuff.
That's great.
That is a good idea.
I won't be surprised if you hear from John with that idea. I mean, I think he's a one-man army right now. And he's
copyright trademark Chris Bragg.
I don't mind.
He's pouring everything into making this thing work.
Yep.
So if you guys want to try it out, it's called Bag Tag Breakdown. Download it on your phones. Give it a shot.
Cool.
The more users that he has, the more data he's going to be able to work with and the faster he can bring this thing to the level he wants to bring it to.
Alliteration.
Yeah. Give it a shot, guys.
Let's do it.
It's very helpful.
Cool.
And that is a wrap on Fired Up.
Mm-hmm.
Which means it's time for the Callahalander Rundown, brought to you unofficially by DiscGolfScene.com. Come on, Pete.
Callahalander Rundown Spring 3.5. I told you guys about it last episode. I'm going to say it again. We're going to get repetitive here. Clash at the Canyons. It's going to start to get a little tight with the spectator packages. So it is only $10 to come and spectate the entire weekend. That is super cheap. The park district will be out there serving beer. They are also going to have an axe throwing tent or
has that been
something.
Confirmed?
Yeah.
Wow.
Dave Herman. Okay. If Dave Herman says axe throwing, he means axe throwing.
Okay.
Okay. You can also grab one of these $75. How many items? Is it five or six?
Six. I have to look at the list. I don't remember.
I had somebody ask me, what is in the mystery pack? And I replied to him, it wouldn't be much of a mystery if I told you what it was.
What?
Did you gather your composure before?
Good day, sir. $75 mystery pack that includes five or six items, we don't recall. Retail value is got to be $100 at least.
At least, yeah.
At least. And it also, go ahead.
And you get in to spectate.
That's what I was going to say. So it includes that $10 spectator pass. So please get on that. There are only 100 of the $75 mystery packs. And I want to say we've sold 15 or 20 or something like that. And the closer we get to Clash, they are going to go bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
So please get on that. DiscGolfScene.com. Come on, Pete. Clash at the Canyon spectator and sponsorship registration. Moving on to leagues. Monday nights at KLM, Disc Golf Chicago will be doing their Sunset Doubles League. Is that still happening?
Yeah, that goes until January 27th. And then
January 27th.
Sorry, June 27th.
Well, damn, dog.
No, it's a long
season.
But after that, it transitions to our Cali League, which is a singles league where you get a mulligan on every hole.
Hell yeah. Huh. Sunset Dubs League, sign up, start at 6:15, tee off at 7. How much does it cost again?
$10.
$10. Easy peasy. Tuesday nights, I've added a couple things to these league nights here because there are so many going on right now.
Okay.
Tuesday nights, rotating schedule is the J-Town Handicap League. It plays the same schedule as Jesse's J-Town Doubles League on Wednesdays. It is a sanctioned league.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it is 9 weeks at a time. So once that 9-week session is up, then it is submitted and you will get a rating based on those 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So you get those points. It is 15. I believe he just recently changed from a super cheap $5 or $6 buy-in to $15.
It was like 11 all in and now it's 15 all in.
They jacked it up. So I would imagine that extra $4 or whatever it was is going back to cash payouts, which is fun because as an AM, you could get sanctioned round and still get cash.
Cash.
Tuesday nights. Check it out. Schedule can be found on jtowndiscgolf.com. Not come on Pete. Wednesday night, rotating schedule is the J-Town Doubles League that I just mentioned. Maybe you've heard someone say Wednesday Dubs over the years. This is that league. Jesse Sains, former guest of the show, runs a great league, cash payout doubles league. The schedule can again be found on jtowndiscgolf.com. Wednesday Dubs is a little bit more, it's the big boy league.
It's that league.
It is the big boy league. So if you're looking to test your skills.
Test your might.
Go to Wednesday Dubs
because
you're either going to get, you're going to go out and surprise people or you're going to get chewed up and spit out.
Either way, it's good for you.
Either way, it's great for everything about your disc golf game.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing with Saturdays though, Delwood Disc Golf Bag Tag. We're not going to be doing it all summer. I kind of just hit a point where we have so many things going on, so many tournaments. The course is just overloaded by 9 a.m.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make sense to run tags at all throughout the summer. So June, July, August, no DDG bag tags. Hopefully all the listeners are the people that come out so they stop getting in my DMs and asking me on Friday night at 10:30 p.m. Please stop doing that.
Please.
But the 1 a.m. The 1 a.m. ones. You guys keep those coming.
It is because I love you all. I don't want your tags round taking 4.5 hours. And then you come back and you're like, dude, there was a backup on hole 4. And I'm like, no shit.
There were three kids in the creek and they wouldn't leave.
We know that there's going to be backups.
Yeah.
So no DDG bag tags for the next 2.5 months. I promise once fall comes, we'll get back to it. Mr. Leo Doc Borowski is doing Trinity Bag Tag still on Sundays at Trinity Links. This is your opportunity to play the course that has been closed for 2 years and get practice in for all the events that will be happening out at Trinity. Super cheap. Tags are $15. That goes to support the Trinity Links boys. Round is $10, and that includes Ace and CTP. Signups are from 10 to 11, and tee off is around 11:15. Last but not least, the club challenge is happening on Sunday, August 7th. We talked about that last episode because you got the invite.
We in there.
Disc Golf Chicago, holler. Tim Kelson is leading the pack for J-Town. He is looking to fill his roster, so get on that. You can reach out to him via Facebook Messenger, or he is frequently posting on the Greater Joliet page asking to fill that roster. So if you are interested, get on it. Reach out to Tim. Tim is hilarious. He has been doing
great.
Of the Facebook posts after Tuesday Night Handicap League, and they are hysterical.
Primo.
I look forward to them. Yeah. I read the whole entire thing. I comment. I engage.
I don't even go, and I look forward to those posts.
I knew Tim was cool. I didn't know he was cool and funny. And when he started doing this, I was like, yo, you're on another level, dude.
Yeah.
So that's all I got.
Yeah. Do holler at Tim. And if you're really good, then holler at me, because we also have openings on our club. And
I figured you would.
We want to fill it up with the most Gucci players we can.
Hey. Right.
How about awesome players? Do you want awesome players?
Yeah, I'm not going to say it, but yeah.
No. Say it.
I'm making progress.
All right. That is the Calahalander Rundown 3.5 Spring Edition, unofficially brought to you by
DiscGolfScene.com.
Come on.
Pete.
Yeah. Damn. Jazz hands.
All right. Now, it's almost time for the bangers and mash, but first, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
Right now.
Hey guys, it's Andy O'Day. You know me as AO the Mortgage Pro, your favorite disc golfing mortgage broker. If you are looking to refinance, now is the time to go over those numbers to see what's going to make the most sense for you. If you're looking to purchase, whether now or in the next maybe 18 months, let's develop that game plan so when the time comes, you're going to be ready to go. You guys know how to reach me on all the social media platforms, AO the Mortgage Pro. If you guys mention Unstable Discourse when you call me, you will get a free travel basket after closing. And now you can find me on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We are live now, episode 0 of Amortize This, talking all things real estate and all things mortgages. I look forward to speaking to you guys, and hopefully I'll see you on the course.
Hey, Disc Golf family, it's Andrew Weary with Redemption Disposal and Recycling. If you need a dumpster, we are your go-to local contact. Are you getting a new roof, remodeling your house, or doing some landscaping? Maybe you're just looking to get rid of the old junk to make room for your new hyzer racks and disc golf gear. Redemption Disposal's standard-sized dumpsters are large enough for most jobs. The 15-yard dump trailers are on regular tires and hauled by standard pickup trucks, helping avoid any damage to surfaces, allowing for tight maneuvering, and the compact style helps minimize any inconvenience to homeowners. Our convenient and speedy service is unmatched, all at a competitive price. You can find us on Facebook at Redemption Disposal or email admin@redemptiondisposal.com. We look forward to helping you out with your future projects, but until then, we'll see you out on the course.
Listen to Unstable Discourse on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, or right from unstablediscourse.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you have the time, leave us a rating and review, or just tell a friend. It helps the podcast get to more listeners.
And we're back from the break. And before we get into the bangers and mash, I want to say a couple of things about the date that this episode is dropping, because we're recording it on the 9th.
Yes.
It's going to drop on the 16th, which is Jason's birthday.
Let's see.
We could sing happy birthday, but it would be weird and stealing Sheila's thunder because we just sang happy birthday to Sheila during the break.
Yeah. Right. Rude. For her birthday, which was yesterday.
Yeah, nice try, Jason.
Belated when it.
But the other thing about that date is that it's 3 days before Father's Day.
It is?
Mm. Yeah. So I just wanted to take this opportunity ahead of time to say shout out to my dad's nuts.
Hey!
My original home.
Tony.
That's where I come from. Thank you, Dad.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. And happy Father's Day to him. His nuts and all the dad's nuts.
You said that's where you come from, but technically, I think that's where he comes from.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, so. Both of us.
Yeah. Just,
we both come from. This is where I learned the term.
I learned the term nut blood.
That did happen on this show. Nut blood.
I've learned a lot from binging on your guys' show.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Nut blood.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah. So yeah, preemptive happy Father's Day to all the dads out there.
We're here to see if you give a shit about our inside jokes.
Yep, yeah. That's it. That's really the whole premise.
That's a deep reference. That's a deep cut, dude.
Yeah, that's great.
And now it's time for the bangers and mash, isn't it? Bangers.
He practiced this the whole drive here.
You pull over.
Google Cockney accent. Google
this.
Now you have to say bangers and mash in your best.
I've literally had 3 seconds to practice. Bangers and mash.
All right.
That was good.
Benedict Cumberbatch in like Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
Oh, I was going for Gordon Ramsay.
All right. Well,
now I'm embarrassed.
Now I'm a donkey.
Yeah.
And I tried not to curse.
He calls people donut. You
now, man.
Donut. All right. Now it's time to really get into the bangers and mash. We're going to be talking again about leadership. Park district relationships, course design. Yeah, there's kind of a lot to cover. You are an interesting specimen. The thing that I kind of would like to start with, and no, I'm not setting up the how did you get into disc golf bit, which
it seemed like it was going
there. I know it feels that way, but I'm not going to.
Good job.
What I do want to start with is the Innova sponsorship. Innova ambassador, right? Or what is your relationship with Innova again?
I joined Innova in 2003. Okay. So I was fortunate. I made an impression on a few of the Innova team players. I got carded with Sam Ferentz, who was the team manager at the time. And I got to play the KC Wide Open with him. And at the time, prior to that, I wasn't very good at throwing AVRs. Played doubles with Yeti at the 2001 national doubles, and I couldn't throw a 150-foot AVR shot during worst shot. I threw some tomahawk in the wind that ended up an obnoxious distance away from the basket. And the look that Yeti gave me was kind of intimidating because he's huge, and I thought he was going to eat me at the moment. And I remember going home, and I was like, man, you like to jump up from 120, so we're going to be like throwing backhands from 30. And I backed myself out to 150, and soon I was able to throw an AVR under the basket from any range. And I had fortunately had dialed that in right before I played with Sam. And Into the Likes when you can throw an AVR under the basket a lot.
Sure.
And I played really well with him that day, and he asked me to join the team. I was still wearing button-up collared shirts with no logos and just
two sizes too big?
Yeah, way big. It's just like swimming on me. And I joined the team, and then I got, you know, eighth at Worlds next year and won the Casey White Open a couple of years later.
Eighth in Open
and the Worlds. Yeah.
Damn. Yep.
That's pretty okay.
Decent.
Yeah, it was intimidating. Hometown, local courses, you know, people are like, oh, did you expect to do better? And I was like, I've been playing pro for 3.5 years. I was pretty happy with eighth. It was an extremely proud moment, and it kind of boosted my confidence to go into the next level. And then
was there a response from Innova from that performance, like that high level?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The next year when I won, you know, I end up winning the KC Wide Open by 6 strokes over Climo. He bear hugged me. Amazing.
Wow.
Amazing champion. You know, like I made my last putt and all of a sudden my feet are off the ground 1.5 feet, and I'm like, couldn't breathe. But it was just it's one of those moments, you know, like it's defining. But the interesting thing about that story is that I actually missed playing the Casey White Open in 2000. I didn't get in, and I could have got in. They were like a little bit late in communicating with me, and I could have driven across town, made it into the tournament, played advanced. Instead, I ended up following the lead card for 4 days or 2 days, 4 rounds. Followed Climo, Barry Schultz, Scott Stokely, Laurent Harris. Changed my mind about everything that I thought I knew about Frisbee, about golf, about the way I approached the game, landing the disc, curling it to the basket. I just didn't understand the game. And I watched them play, and it fast-tracked everything that I did.
So it was a good thing that you didn't
get it. Absolutely. Yeah, sometimes, you know, like when you're talking about those spectator passes and getting out and watching the game, there's just nothing better,
right.
Really. I mean, you can play all your life and never learn. It's very rare. Yeah,
we all know dudes that have been doing that.
But yeah. You can go out there and spend a little time, and if your eyes are open, you'll see things that you just aren't paying attention to on a regular basis. And suddenly, man, these guys do things with the disc, and especially these days, you know, watch Simon and Paul and Ricky, and it's just special, really. We're in a really cool era of growth in the sport.
I want to make sure I got the timeline right. So you missed the first year in this, and you watched these players. The next year you played?
This was in 2000. So 2005, I broke my little toe playing online poker.
What?
Yeah, I mean, it seems weird, but it's a real straightforward situation. Yeah,
I can see how that happens.
Oh, okay. I think I understand what happened.
Yeah.
No, actually, my buddy bought me in, like, my buddy Justin McLuhan, like, online poker was kind of big at the time, so he bought me in for, like, $50. I flipped it in about $300. I won a $30 table one night, jumped off the computer, left my toe on the bookshelf. My girlfriend's like, what happened at the time? And I was like, I broke my Noonan toe.
Did you say Noonan?
That's all right.
That was good.
Newman?
Close enough.
After watching these guys play and it changed your perspective, then you came back and you beat Climo by 6 strokes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We played the KC Wide Open. I came out, shot a course record at the Wyco Gold course, and just didn't let off the throttle. Found myself in the lead, found myself in some rain delays. People were getting rattled by it. But I'm from the Midwest. We play in all kinds of conditions. I struggled just like everybody else. But I, you know, a lot of people were, it was in their head. I powered through it. And next thing you know, I'm up 6 strokes. You know, a few holes to play. Had a roll away. Climo snapped his head like blood in the water, like a shark. Mm-hmm. Like, it was intimidating. I can remember that look he gave me where I thought, wow, can you really give away 6 strokes in 3 holes? Apparently, he thinks you can.
Let's see how it plays out. Yeah, right.
So I made the putt, the comeback. It's huge. Finished out 17, did well, parked 18. That's when I left the ground. He picked me up. It was really, gave me chills, you know, thinking about it. And then all these years later, he's just been he's my favorite champion.
True once in a lifetime moment.
Oh, absolutely. And during that, which is interesting, is I'm winning the tournament, and a guy had been drinking vodka out of a water bottle all day. I thought he was just really hydrated.
he was.
But I remember he walked with me during the morning round, but by the end of the afternoon, he was like, obvious. Everybody in the crowd knew he was the guy. And he kicked Timmy Gill's disc back in bounds on a shot. And thank God somebody in the gallery had watched it happen. And they were like, no, liar. And they called him out, but they're walking away. A little intimidating when drunk, he's like, what are you talking about? But he kicked his disc back in bounds. And luckily, they, you know, called it what it was. And wow. Timmy was a champ. He knew he'd thrown OB. You know, he was like, ah, I doubt it. Holy so, mackerel. But yeah, it was really intimidating. Kind of like biggest moment of your life. And it's getting a little weird. So
right.
Kansas City's always been a good place for me.
I like the connection between taking the time to like watch the pros and what that does to your game. Kind of reminds me a little bit about what we were talking about last episode of not just taking all of your free time to get out and play another round.
Yeah.
It's like take some time to observe, maybe take some time to caddy, like take some time to learn. You know, of course your free time is precious and you want to escape and play as much as you can. But if you want to get really good, you got to watch really great players and you got to just bask in it. Like,
don't be afraid to jump in with the people that are out of your skill level. If you know, my dad always said, if you play bad, just play fast. I mean, don't be intimidated, jump in with them, play fast, learn, pay attention.
Totally.
And there's nothing, no greater learning tool than getting your ass handed to you.
Right.
So, I mean, it is inspiring if you do it the right way mentally.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. I really don't mean to pick on you, but do you know who Ken Climo is, just out of curiosity?
I've heard you guys say that name a lot.
So
that's about the extent of it.
How would you guys describe Ken Climo to Jason?
I think Sprague is going to punch Jason.
I know you looked at me, and I know I looked at him.
he's the Jordan. Yeah. If Paul Macbeth is the
Tiger,
then, you know, Kenny's the Jordan.
Okay.
Oh. And at the same time, like the 90s, he just owned the entire decade.
Oh, sure. Okay.
It's almost weird in a way because we had Jack Nicklaus type players before Climo. And Climo kind of felt like a Tiger Woods of sorts, almost like he was ahead of the time. I think the new players are, you know, just, man, what a great time. You have this feedback loop, right? We didn't have that back then. The feedback loop I always describe as the YouTube.
Yeah.
The ability to observe.
But I think Climo kind of created the possibility for that to happen.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, it just took over. But, I mean, he changed the whole game.
Meaning that people wouldn't have been coming out with cameras and, like, there wouldn't have been that draw for media if there wasn't somebody just dominating like that.
Yeah.
Right. There wouldn't be a story to tell.
He did
recording.
He did create the excitement. He was able to tell people, I'm here. Come find me. I'm not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, he wrote that story, you know.
It's a really common debate that you'll hear with golfers today. You know, Macbeth or Climo. Like that debate pops up all the time. I don't really know how to answer that. Do you have an opinion?
Yeah, I have a great perspective. I feel I played with both of them. I think David Garb taught me the term baby scalps. It's where
baby scalps?
Yeah, it's where I start bragging about beating Macbeth in his first worlds. And he's like, are those baby scalps? Okay, yeah, sure. So yeah, I played with them both. The one interesting thing about, you know, they both have an extremely high mental fortitude. They have a short-term memory. They believe beyond it. Most players don't understand what it is to believe. That's one of their strengths. But the thing about Paul is that he throws far. Climo had distance that was sneaky. People knew he threw far. He's just not known for that. He wasn't a power player. He put it in position. He beat you on the short game. He beat you on the putting green. He threw his shots where they belonged. Didn't make a lot of mistakes. Mentally strong. Made the right decisions. Paul's a lot like that, but you have that athleticism that Paul has that I feel like his distance is a little more than Climo's.
Maybe a little more aggressive.
A little more aggressive possibly because Climo probably didn't always have to aggress, but man, you couldn't count him out. He'd throw in shots you wouldn't believe and he was sneaky long off the tee. He just didn't need it.
So I know that this is not like the reason that we were here to, this is not like part of the planned bangers and mash, but I do love the debate.
Yeah.
Do you guys have a take on Paul and his prime?
I don't have a take, but what I want someone like Jason to understand is that in the 90s, there was significantly less disc technology than there is today.
Okay.
So Ken Climo was doing what he was doing with no faster than like, I mean, 9-speed drivers were around like 2000.
The cool stories I hear about Climo is where he was in Arizona playing, I want to say it was Worlds possibly, but he threw a shot 420 feet, semi-low canopy, downhill with a Cobra, full flight, parks the hole, nobody's getting near the pin. I tell that story because, you know, Ken had told it to me one day and I was like, and I try to remember it and I butcher it every time. people that know the story fill me in every time. So, you know, he's not, you know, it's a real story. Like they're like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like every time I start to like kind of stumble into that story and somebody knows it, will fill me in on all the details and it doesn't change much from his story to theirs.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're talking about like special throws with discs that just didn't fly that far. You had to be able to control the angles. Wow.
The KC Pro Rocks, mm-hmm. That's Ken Climo. That's what KC stands for.
Oh, sure.
Have we never had this conversation?
It's all starting to click. No, yeah.
I'm a bad boss.
No, we haven't.
I'm a bad brother. No, so super baseline plastics for one. So they didn't really have premium blend plastics like we see today until uh-huh. like 2000 and forward. So okay. he was doing all this with like the DX and the Pro plastics, mm-hmm. uh-huh. the cheaper stuff that mm-hmm. they were constantly cycling in and out of the bag because they would get beat up so quickly that
yeah. oh, sure.
right. they'd become too understable and now you got to mm-hmm. throw a new one in the bag. And right. so okay. it's just yeah. compared to today's disc standards, it was the yeah. Wild West.
I didn't really understand that until I was reading Scott Stokely's book and he was talking about cycling those discs in and out of his bag and cyclones and X, you know, mm-hmm. X-Cals and all of these and knowing what the disc would do based on how he hit the tree. Yeah. Okay, I just threw this Excalibur into the tree and now I have to hyzer flip it.
Now it's less stable.
And understanding those discs because they didn't have the shot selection and the premium plastics that would hold up to that.
Really?
So you would have
that's
to.
That's kind of fascinating.
I used to hashtag my discs on major tree hits.
Yeah, he mentioned that too. Yeah, like he would hatch those out. Yep.
So you'd know after like five or six and then like this one's the sole, this one's, we would buy discs that would fly amazing, hit one tree, and then it was a different disc.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that was like frustrating. And then you get into these discs that last a long time, but then you kind of lose that fast life cycle, that mm-hmm. ability. So we have these discs that last a long time. We lose them. We get freaked out. Some of that DX time was really nice because you would cycle through a disc so fast. You would learn that shelf life was so much smaller. You know, you'd beat it up so much quicker that you would learn a lot in a short amount of time. Where now we kind of gradually ease into it, and it takes a long time for those discs to change. And it's
sure.
Sometimes that educational process was good yeah. back in the day.
Mm-hmm. It's like a Nate Doss always talks about. He always throws brand new plastic because
he wants to replace it.
It's consistent, and he mm-hmm. doesn't have to worry about a beaten disc that he loses or, you know, gets, sure. you know, throws in the water. And now he has to replace it. And now he, you know, he's back to square one. If he's always throwing a new disc, and I feel like you're doing yourself a disservice by not cycling through those discs like that, but that's just the way he plays.
Or shelving them at their medium stable.
Right. You know, right, right.
That was one of the
but
things
he's
I like
a world
to do
champion too, so.
Shelve them. Okay. Medium stable, shelve it. And that way, if I ever ran into a problem, I'd be able to fall back on it. But then sometimes you end up losing those discs or you never come back to them.
You totally remove that situation where you lose your one driver that is perfectly beat in and you're like, I can't replace it. Like it took years to.
They just don't last long enough.
Right. Yeah. No, and Juliana had the same philosophy. She wanted to be able to pick up a disc right out of the box and be able to throw. And she didn't want to have to rely on that knowledge, that tribal knowledge. She wanted to be able to just pick it up, buy it anywhere. Mm-hmm. Move.
You're talking about Juliana Corver?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Friend of the show.
Listener of the show.
Mm-hmm. No big deal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Toucher of my hand.
Oh.
Yeah.
Once.
She's a toucher of my life. Like, she's the one who told me.
Times.
She said so one day. nothing I had to, like, press charges over. She told me, she's like, you can go on tour. And I just kind of didn't occur to me that that was an option. And she just made it so a matter of fact. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can. Of course I can. She was like, well, you have to plan. You know, she spelled out how difficult it can be. But it a lot of people just put these barriers in front of themselves and they don't realize their life's finite.
How many people in early 2000s, when you're having that conversation with Juliana, how many people were touring? How completely new was that concept?
Amateurs, mostly. And then the guys who were touring were just scraping by. You know, the Mike Youngs, Cam Todds. I know Nate Doss and Steve Rico were out on tour for a little while in 03. And it's just not for everybody. You know, it's a hard road. Yeah. I'm super impressed with the players nowadays. You know, I'm so old now that like a few years ago, it was like 7 years ago. Like, it doesn't occur to me how much time's passed. Paige has been on the tour. Ricky, all these guys, they've been on tour for 7, 8, 10 years. I mean, they're veterans. This yeah. is like not easy. It's hard to be on the road. It doesn't matter how much fun you're having, it's going to grind you down.
Yeah.
It's like a musician.
We have to talk about the difference, though, between going on tour then versus now, where you have now the ability to really make your personal brand with social media and like selling discs and selling merch and all the things that you need to support yourself on tour. Mm-hmm. So much. It's a completely different game than it was then.
But is it less work?
I don't know if it's less work. I just know that it's harder when you're literally broke. Mm-hmm. If I don't win today, like Sean has said before, if I don't win today, can I get to the next leg of the tournament? Can I eat tonight? Like,
yeah.
The money pressure on a player on tour has got to be less now than it was back then.
And I think the key for new players going on tour is to have people like a manager that can help, a sponsor who plays manager for them to help them make, you know, sound decisions, to help them get ahead of the game, to help them avoid traps, to just keep them on point. Because that's the hard part, right? You know, a lot of young kids that get on the road, that make some bad decisions here and there, a couple financial, suddenly it's really hard. To your point, how much work is it? You know, I mean, it's a lot of work to maintain that social media presence. It's a lot of work to maintain that retail presence, to keep yourself solvent. And it's hard to pay someone to keep all that going. So you really,
there wasn't as much expectation in 2004, 5, 6, because there was only a dozen people in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That knew what a touring disc golf player was.
There are cameras on these players at all times now.
Yeah.
So. You know what was really surprising to me is we were in Vegas, 2 years ago for the Las Vegas Challenge, and I can't remember who it was. It was an FPO player, but we were walking by and they just hopped out of their little tiny RV van. And it was just another day at the office. And it would occurred to me that they've all been doing this so long that they have their own little, they're like gypsies, all traveling together, and they have their own little community. And it is so natural for them to just sleep in that van, hop out, get your bag, let's go. Yeah. It was so surreal to me to see that happen, but they're making it happen. So good for them. I don't know. I don't think I could do that.
Anybody can do it for a short period of time, but if you ever go on vacation for 2 weeks, you start getting a little homesick.
Mm-hmm.
That happens quickly on the road.
I bet.
And after 3 weeks, that homesickness is real. And then 4 weeks, now you turn it into what I did, 8 months on tour, 11 months on the road for the most part. And it was, you turn into a little bit of a Wile E. Coyote. You start craving some of the real life. And I can only imagine them doing it 8, 9, 10 years.
Yeah.
Even with it being viable with contracts, they're still having to be like musicians setting up. They have to get from town to town. Yeah. They have to shake hands, kiss babies, do clinics, there's just a lot. And no matter how much fun you're having, man, wow.
Look at it from the family aspect. The only reason why most of them have solid relationships is because they're
other disc golfers.
They're other touring pros. It's not like you see fiancés, male or female, what have you, girlfriends, boyfriends that are non-disc golfers. They're like, I don't do this. You know, she's into this, but I'm just, I'm just carrying the bag.
Couldn't work.
When was it that you went on tour? From when to when?
2006, I was full-time. I started in February and I ended in November.
Okay.
So played 46 events. I won the national points title. We were 1,200 points. Me and Barry Schultz were 180 points away. So that's 18 players in that A tier. Mm-hmm. He was going to play a B tier, which gave him eight points per player. And he's going to play Tupelo Bay. I'm sitting in Oregon. I was getting ready to book a flight to Delaware to pick up a C tier to win the national points title.
Book a flight to a C tier.
Can you imagine? And then not even guaranteed, because the C tiers had less points. If he beats enough people, my flight could just be a bust. Not even, didn't pay off. So he ended up having a back injury, pulling out of Tupelo Bay. I always tell people, I called all over the East Coast. Anybody I knew, hey, did he really pull out? Because this flight is expensive.
And that's also the totally realistic thing is that you, no disc golf scene, no Facebook, no social media, no nothing at that point. Different for you was it back in the day to even find out about events?
You know, the PDGA had its discussion board, which is the Wild West is basically social media. I mean, all out the best. Yeah. Stuff the best, any of your drama that you can imagine today, all filtered into one location.
Yeah.
If you can just wrap your mind around that for a minute. And there was a lot of controversy on the tour. There are a lot of high personalities, a lot of in the early 2000s, there's a little bit of a
and high personalities.
But it was really hard traveling around at the time. You didn't have your, social media, you didn't have the GPS. You were constantly pulling out the, the Atlas or the MapQuest, and then making bad decisions, wrong turns, sleeping in the wrong places, getting hustled out of the wrong things. I feel like today would have been a lot easier, but then also you have that social media pressure.
Yeah.
You're performing at all times when you're on social media.
Yeah.
And you're, like you said, there's the expectation. Your fans are expecting you to go live every day or to make a post every day.
Yeah.
I mean, Gavin Babcock has to ace every shot now.
Yeah, right.
Totally.
Yeah.
Or, well, no, look at Matt Orme today posted about his social anxiety about getting online and posting social media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He and I toured in 06. So he was 18 years old. We're on tour. He's just cutting his teeth. Here he is all these years later, still dealing, like, look what he's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, like we have different eras, different pains, different pressures.
Yeah.
I kind of like being in that. I almost think it was probably easier for me not having that social pressure.
Mm.
Yeah. Cause it took me a long time to mature and understand how social media works. So how are these kids handling it?
Sure.
That's something you've talked about. Like some of these kids don't, like they're saying things and doing things that like they could all benefit from a manager or somebody to like coach them on how you're conducting yourself, you know, what you're saying, what kind of decisions you're making, how you're reflecting on the brand. And that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they do a great job though. By and large, I'm super impressed with the crop of kids that are out there playing on tour, the way they carry themselves, the energy, the fun. It feels fun. Yeah. Like I can't tell on the surface that it's doesn't feel as contentious as in the past. I know there's little rivalries here and there, and there's a little.
No, there should be.
That's and there should, but but by and large, it feels like a great community of kids out there on tour right now.
Yeah,
I lived in Oakland for a while and was able to snag some Conan O'Brien tickets down in Burbank, and so my wife and I made a trip down there, and we were like, we're gonna see the Conan show live because we watched it every night, and we were huge fans. We got there super early. Didn't realize how early we got there, but thank God we did. We were first in line, which meant we were right in the center front row.
Cool.
Right. And side note, one of my wife's cousins did some graphic design work for Conan and came up with this really cool poster for a tour that he'd been doing. So we got a copy of this poster and we brought it with us thinking, I'm going to be 5 feet from Conan O'Brien when there's a break or something. Maybe he'll sign, you know, like we'll bring it. And he is such a huge personality that he came out and did the show. And as soon as, you know, the break would happen or whatever would happen, he would turn it off in a way that made him look like a robot.
Yeah.
And he was just the most miserable, sad person. And at one point, I remember that happening. And he looked at us. I printed t-shirts that had their face and his co-host at the time on them, like with mustaches and like made it really funny, right? And he looked at us and looked at the poster and it looked like he wanted to puke in his mouth. And then he walked away and like I immediately was like, oh my God, he's a real person. And this must, he does this 5 days a week and then tours and he must be miserable. And I haven't really watched the show since, but it really put a perspective on not only does he has to do all this stuff, but he has to keep that personality 100% of the time. And that really sucks.
It's really hard to
meet your heroes is what you're saying.
That's, I mean, that was a real big eye opener, but it really made him human before he was like larger than life. And then he was immediately just a guy that was trying to make it.
Did that make you like him more?
No, not at all. But I understood him
more.
And so I guess, you know, in a way.
To your point, you know, don't meet your heroes. If your heroes are people that are in media a lot, there's definitely something to that. It's easier for us because we're just audio. And it's one of the reasons why I know people have asked if we're ever going to do video stuff. And I know there's some resistance to it. But for me, the resistance would be that when you're on video, you have to amplify your personality by like 2x or 3x to seem normal energy. Mm-hmm. We're so used to trained actors and trained like professionals on camera that if you were just being you normal on camera, you would seem like the dullest, most boring, unwatchable person. I've only done a few things on camera with like making commercials for jobs I've had and little like
couple snuff films, just no big deal.
Just a couple little like
I've seen them.
Yeah,
informative videos.
Pornhub is free.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You literally are. I would have to like take it over and over again, and really awesome. Double my personality just to seem normal. So it's real work to like get yourself to sound and look normal and right on camera and to like grab someone's attention.
Yeah.
You can't just like be chilling and doing you. Like you gotta amp it up. So it's exhausting for sure.
To us, these pros are celebrities, but to a lot of people that they don't even understand, you know, the concept of how famous, quote unquote, they are in the disc golf world, but they still have to keep that personality and that presence going. And one of the pros that I saw that with was Ricky. And that's just because he's still younger, but like he showed up at Delwood. He was just 100% all the time. And you could tell, like, he really genuinely enjoyed what he was doing.
He's a golden retriever.
And he wouldn't, he wasn't putting on a show. Like, he was doing it to do it, you know? And every single person he interacted with was the same, and he got that same energy. And I just don't see that from a lot of people, but there's no way I could do that. No. I would turn into Conan O'Brien. I would shut it off and look at you like, get the fuck out of my face. I'm going to my trailer.
I want to try and get us back to, this was a really, really great.
Oh,
really great tangent. I said
all. You got halfway through the word. Four that's and half a point.
All is not halfway through.
You're at 4.5.
You're going to own this today. Stop backtracking.
4.5.
That's it was a quarter. Awe is a quarter of the word.
AWE. No.
We round up.
S-O-M-E. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome are we.
You're good Lord. You're still an Innova ambassador, right?
Yep.
Okay, so what do they expect from you nowadays?
Well, the ambassadorship was kind of a promotion when we were going through some family struggles. They kind of contacted me and said, we're going to put you on the ambassador team, so we're not going to judge you on your performance. You can just be a father and a husband.
And you have to shave your eyebrows.
And I have to shave my eyebrows. Mm-hmm. And I shaved my eyebrows. My buddy was like, this is why you're not winning. He shaved my eyebrows before I got my 100th win the night before.
What? So,
yeah, this came on my memory today because I apparently...
Oh, there are photos of this?
Yeah, apparently I saw that tomorrow, today, actually, yeah. This tomorrow will, or Saturday will be my anniversary of my 100th win. I went to his house and he was like, this is why you're not winning, because he pulled my eyebrows down past my nose. So I don't know if you can picture that in your mind, but it was affecting my game. And so he shaved them off and I ended up winning the next day. So it's kind of...
Wait, did he have your permission to shave them?
Oh yeah. He cuts his own hair, and like, yeah, no, it was all on. It was all. Like, he didn't jump me.
I was just like, well, were you sleeping? And he did this like,
no, he pushed him down. He sat on his chest.
Not
and,
this time.
He was sleepwalking and did it himself.
Right. We've talked about this. I'm a heavy sleeper. So.
Yeah. I'm a good time.
So they don't expect much. They like having their brand associated with you. And as long as you always conduct yourself as a good ambassador for the brand, they're pretty happy.
Yeah. I mean, I go out of my way. When you talk about how Ricky, it's like natural to him. I love sharing knowledge and teaching people. And I especially like teaching old dogs new tricks. So if I can find someone who's been playing for 30 years and teach them some little wrinkle and they're like, ooh, neat. And that kind of gets me excited. And that's easy with new players, you know. So I get excited to teach people that are unteachable. To me, it's exciting to be able to help someone bridge a gap, whatever it is. If I can make you find something where a year later you come back and go, man, that thing you showed me.
Yeah.
And they get that little glossy look and they start drooling. You're like, here, wipe that off. But, you know, it happens. And that's exciting to me. So I love teaching.
So you mentioned that you had your 100th win anniversary coming up. You have how many wins now?
108.
108. And you earned over six figures playing disc golf.
Yeah.
111K.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad was always like, I'd complain about tournaments. And he's like, well, it's better than a stick in the eye. My dad's always good about level setting my expectations versus reality. And so I would complain and he would explain it's a Frisbee.
Sure.
And they paid you to do it.
Do you have any reference of like the top earners in disc golf history? Do you have any idea where you fall on that list?
There's plenty of guys that kind of jumped. There are a couple hundred thousand in the same amount of time. Kale, guys like that. I'm in that like veteran journeyman. You know, we're talking like 25 years at 111,000. I'm not good at math, but it's not fancy. It's nothing like you're not going to go and quit your job. I tried.
It's around.
It's just around over like, 4 grand.
Yeah, just over 4 grand.
Yeah, I made $20,000, I think, in 2006, and I spent $21,023.13.
Boom, boom,
somewhere
boom.
In that. Yeah. So it's expensive to be on tour. You have to kind of have a game plan.
So that would be interesting to see what you've earned versus what you spent to be on tour.
Oh, I have that chart. I've actually documented it pretty. I don't know how accurate it is, but I'm profitable. Oh, my tax guy writes off a lot of it. The government thinks I'm not profitable every 3 years.
Well, that's how you have to play the game. We're
both just sharing way too much information on this episode.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, is this? You can cut that out, right?
I would absolutely cut that out. Are we recording? I promise. Yep.
I have this like thing about if the tournament asks me for a 1099 or my social security number, it's been a good weekend.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So we talked a little bit outside about Camden 2, the course. I have not been there. All I know about it is what was just talked about outside. So what I know so far is it's beautiful.
It's all right.
And mm-hmm. it's challenging. Mm-hmm. Sean, you're the course designer. Can you give us a...
In this room, I am not.
You are
when Chris is not here.
Yeah, but of us. You yes. and Chris are the course designers. Let's hear your thoughts on Camden 2 as a course.
I'm immediately going to go to what we talked about outside. Uh-huh. Funny story. I think that was the last time we went.
Yeah, it was.
The joke by the end of the round, and this is still a compliment to the
course. We actually mentioned this phrase last episode tell anyone why. Yes, I slipped
it in. You repeated it, yep. But we never explained.
Flat dry ground.
Is that
nice? I remember that.
The dry part of it is only because it had just rained, so it's not any
like on the dry
note
over.
Of the course. Okay. It was just that
the course generally
round.
Drains well, yes, but it's clay. Does. So what he's talking about is when it gets a little rainy.
It gets slick.
It's a little slick.
It always seems if you're having a bad round, which can happen there because of the level of challenge, that. The ground you're always standing on is not flat. The shot you're about to throw to next, you're not landing in a flat spot. There's a lot of, it feels like the funhouse version of a disc golf course in the best way that I could say that as a compliment.
Yeah. So the part of the challenge of the course is really the way, knowing how the disc is going to land and how it's
exactly
you know, how you're ground gonna play. The ground play. You know?
Yeah. It's not recreational land. It was kind of, it's a peninsula with a creek that runs through some up and down elevations. It's 60 acres, but we had to really force it to, you know, we had to really force the design to get a par 64 out of it. And some of the land just isn't recreational, you know, it's challenging.
Yeah.
It's a lot like being at Delwood and some of the elevation drops, except not as clean, right? So it's like more like being at Highland.
It is like Highland. It's an extreme version of Highland, and I would say it's one of the only courses that I've played that is hard, but not for hard's sake.
Yes.
Right? It is challenging in a way that is fun to play, and you can understand why it's challenging and not just playing at Oakbrook where you're like, oh man, I am over this. You know, just because it's too tight, just because they ran out of space.
I mean, it's hard because, like, it's making you think.
Yes. It is achievably, that's not a reward. You can be a 900 rated player and still score and play well because there's opportunity for you to do that. As where, say,
that's a good
Northwood Black isn't even meant for you to be there.
That's a great way to, well, and Camden 2 is designed for the FPO distance. So we designed it for 2009 Women's National Championships. My ex was a women's amateur national champion. So I kind of approached it from the perspective, if you can throw 250 feet to 350 feet, this is where your landing areas are going to be. You can still access the green from there and score. If you choose to aggress these 525 foot par fours, which I have asked Paul McBeth and different players, hey, are these too short? Should I come up with gold tees? Everybody says, no, we love that fact that we can get aggressive, get around the corner, get that 70, 80 footer, potentially take an eagle, maybe even hang ourselves. I mean, it's really exciting to see players overplay the course. Kale throws mid-range off one hole. Other players are attacking it. I play a mid-range off the same hole. I've also taken a double circle five playing it safe. So it's like kind of the kind of course where you play it one week and the next week you're like, great. I might tack it a little different today. Or it might be conditional. Maybe you're not feeling your game and so you start changing how you're attacking. I'm not feeling my drives. I'm going to take a little off the tee because it makes it easier on that second shot. I don't need to be all the way down the fairway. Yeah.
It's really a course that you have to visit and play continually to really appreciate because I think I've only played it three times. And every time I go, it's almost brand new to me because of what you're saying. Like my game has changed so much that I'm throwing completely different shots and won't benefit from the fact that I should have learned last time.
Mm-hmm. I think the neat part of the course to me is that we've had a crew of volunteers. We show up. The key for us was we show up every Monday. And so once you show up every Monday, regardless what you decide to do, you start to kind of develop this camaraderie where you're like, if I don't show up, I know Joe, they're all going to be there. If I don't show up, they're going to be there working. So it became this thing where we were consistent every Monday. We started averaging 100 work days a year. We did that over 10 years, averaged five guys a week every Monday. The key was beer brats and fire. So we're allowed to burn. We build giant fires. Then we bring beer and brats. That was my thing, is like, okay, well, it's going to be a little bit of a party. Our magic number is 5 people. I've always said, like, you get 10 people or 8 people, 3 people will pull 2 people off of the party. You know, there'll be 5 people standing around, 3 people working. You get 5 people, there's amount of everybody working. So if we get 10 people, we divide them into 2 groups. The key is make sure it's a good time. Make sure you log everybody's efforts. If people show up just to show moral support, we put them on the work log. They'd show up, kick a few logs on the fire, drink some beers, hang out, make us feel good, make us smile.
Right.
Work log.
Oh, absolutely. Love that's part of it. Yeah.
And so we started getting more people showing up just to come out and entertain us, to keep us company, to let us know they support us, what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's just become, and now I've handed off, give my shout out. You guys do shout outs? Is it too early for a shout out?
Definitely. Thank you for asking. This is a shout out free show. Please don't do that.
So, Josh Ray, I apologize. I'm going to go ahead and withdraw my shout out.
No, man, let it rip.
Yeah. So when we moved into our new house, my wife at the time, she said, hey, my coworkers are going to come in and move your stuff. And he comes in, he's like, man, you got a lot of shit. Like, he's just kind of like, what is this guy? Like, man, this is all my disc golf stuff, man. Like, what are you talking about?
It's not shit.
Yeah. And he's like a skeet shooter. You know, he's like shoots shotguns and stuff. And
skeet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly.
To the window, to the wall.
To the window. Exactly.
Yeah.
So the sweat dropped down my dad's balls.
Right, right.
Blood, not blood.
Totally interrupted you.
So no. So Josh, I was like, he helps me move. I'm a cheapskate at the time. Apparently, I just gave him a PFN Leopard.
No big deal.
That's solid, dude. What are you talking about?
So he actually probably had flight numbers. I think I talked to him about this. At any rate, I thought it was the best thing. You know, the first one's free, right? So now he's hooked on disc golf. All these years later, a couple 3-step programs. I told him to go all 12, but whatever. He's doing good though. He's working on the course now, like full time. He's like taking the baton. He saw it on the ground. I kind of got burned out, like my 8th version of burnout. You know how it is. When you work on the course, you work on the course, you go through these phases. I kind of went through a phase where I just had to step away for a while. And man, he just took it and ran. He's been keeping the crew together, keeping everybody out there. I suggest a couple projects. He came out and built it ahead of me before I can even get out there to do the project with him. And then I show up and he does another one with me. So we end up building all these projects and stuff. If I show up, he's just on cue, on point, anything you need. He does all of our trophies, just knocking it out of the park. It's just interesting when you give somebody their first disc and they turn into one of your favorite people.
Yeah.
It's like, beautiful. You don't know what's going to, you know, you need all those different personalities in disc golf. You need people that'll run leagues, run a podcast, keep everybody informed, have fun.
Ryan does all the things.
That's not what you guys are saying earlier.
Get out of town.
I mean, I wasn't supposed to say that.
Oh, that's too
funny. I'll cut that out.
How did you end up getting the opportunity to design the course? Like,
I love this story. My buddy Paul liked to drink at the time, and he's sober now. But at the time, it was really a no-brainer. We're on hole 9. We're at the halfway point of the course, and we're the furthest point from the parking lot. And I was like, Paul, you're going to have to carry all your beer the whole round. And that was it. That's all I had to say. But literally, it was all I had to say. When I did say, and what if your dad was here? He'd have to, like, and you wanted to leave halfway through. He'd have to walk a mile back to the parking lot to get out at the hole 9. And Paul just like, wow. I really love the design that they had, though.
Oh, so it was already a course, and you came in and like changed it completely.
They had designed it in 2003. They started building it. The city came in and went, whoa, stop the plan. Let's see how Camden One does. They didn't believe in disc golf at the time. So they got the rug pulled out from under them. They'd already started design holes. They walked me through the original design when we finally got back into it in 2007 when they gave us a grant to do the Women's Nationals.
First off, how did they know to ask you?
I had just moved.
I also want to talk about the park.
Yeah, I just moved to the area from Oregon. I was living with David Philberg and Avery Jenkins, and I had, you know, had all this time on tour, and they said, hey, what do you think? And I had already given them some opinions about some of the other courses where I said, no, the words you're looking for is fair and challenging, not hard. So they were kind of looking at things the wrong way. I wanted them to think fair and challenging. And I explained to him, like, you're going to have to carry all your beer. Your dad's not going to be able. And he's like, oh my God, please go out, look it over, redesign it. I loved a lot of the holes they had. So I kept seven of the original holes. Actually, some of my favorite holes in the course, hole 15 is the original hole 9. One of my favorite holes, beautiful, picturesque. But they just had this layout that didn't flow right. So I went ahead and created an 8-10 loop that kind of about the same size, get you back to the car. I was able to incorporate a lot more par fours than they had originally. With the focus of FPO, it allowed me to not focus on that gold level distance. So it let me have more course to work with, which is huge. And the best part about designing the FPO is that it speaks to so many skill levels. What you're focused on is professional upshots, professional quality control. Distance is the last thing on your mind. You're not like, okay, the FPO throw far, further than a lot of men, you know, at the top level. But the average FPO is kind of in a distance that would kind of mirror the average Joe, I would say, in my opinion. My key is on that quality control upshot. Can they execute? I don't mind making those greens tight. I don't mind all of that aspect of it, but that distance off the tee, if you can design to FPO, you can design to millions of people.
It's a really smart strategy there.
And it's fun, right?
It like is.
That. It's Northwood Black. Not always fun is like what I've heard. It's amazing course, cool. But a lot of people.
It was cool.
But no, it's super cool. But yeah, the fun part isn't for everybody, to your point. It's like you, not everybody's going to walk out there and be ready.
It was funny to know that we were going to have our asses handed to us, and that happened.
But were your expectations versus reality? Where were you at?
I had heard so much about it.
Was it more than you expected?
It was, more than I expected.
You went in with this, my God. And but then it was even.
The footage doesn't always do a good job of showcasing the course.
Well, it's hard. You watch the Joe Gibson just fillet it with a buzz, and you're like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fillet-able, and then you get there and you're like.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I looked at scores from, I can't remember what tournament it was at Northwood Black, and I looked at the last MPO place and what their total strokes were. And I was like,
oh, the difference.
I got to get that. And I looked at the rating and it was like a 926 rated round. And I was like, oh, I can shoot that. And being there, and I think I was one off of it or something by the end, you know, close enough, but knowing what it took to get to that, I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This was a circus, but it was fun. It was really fun, but it was not something that I wouldn't go there to try and compete because it was just ridiculous.
It's more about just seeing if you can survive it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we survived.
It's Alone. It's the disc golf course version of the TV show Alone.
Yeah. Can you get through all 18 holes? Right.
Come pick me up.
Kind of.
Like when
I'm 13. Done. Pick me up.
I've been here for 6 months.
Have I lost enough weight for them to med pull me?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Can I see my ribs? Yeah. I mean,
just losing your mind in the middle of the course.
Well, all four of us got eights and nines on hole 12, and we were stoked.
Sixes and sevens felt like, okay. All right, got off the fairway a little bit, but okay.
I've heard the rough is tough, and so it should improve over time, I would think, at that.
Yeah.
I want to go play Northwood Black real bad. I also want to go play Camden 2, and I want to play them with you guys.
I would go play Camden 2 first, for sure.
I want to make it interesting. I'm all hyped up from my win this weekend.
What are you doing on Monday?
Working, and I can't take it off because I'm off tomorrow.
So I have this thing where I name all the layouts at Camden 2. And I give them unique layouts based on the size of the animal. So you got the bear, you know, you got cougar, titmouse. Don't laugh. You guys get your head out of the gutter. No, but we'd name them. So if you guys come to town and you let me know in advance, I'll make sure I'll move a pin or two to put it in a unique layout. And then we'll come up with a cool animal name.
Oh, God.
Cool. And give you like a so the golden bear layout was in honor of Michael Williams, who was the golf pro at La Mirada.
Mm-hmm.
And he drove through. He was on retirement tour and he came through the Milan area and said, hey, we have this Monday work night. And he came out, never played the course, came out and worked on our Monday work night. 90 degrees, put on some gloves, started throwing things on the fire, smiling, had a time of his life. Ended up playing the course. He aced his hole 10. Got a photo. Yep, got a photo of it with him pointing at it and everything. He ended up passing a few years later, but we ended up naming the Golden Bear layout after him. So it's like everybody, you know, people come to town, they have a little bit of a, if they mean something to me.
We actually have all talked about our spirit animals on the show before.
All right.
So maybe we could work that in because I don't remember what everyone's was, but I know Ryan mine's was the toad.
Yeah.
Toad.
Yeah. A toad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like 40 million toads in the yard. earlier today.
Only one Fancher, though.
That's right. Yep.
I really wanted to get into Park District relationship stuff, but I feel like we covered a lot. Do you guys have any specific questions about the Park District relationships?
So someone has kind of taken over for you in the course maintenance, you said?
So we have a different situation than you guys. Our relationship with the city is quiet. They brought us in to their city hall one day, slapped us on the hand for... Because every time we had a fire near the highway, somebody would call us in. Sure. And then we'd have to re-explain to the new police people. That's a real term, right? Police people?
Yeah,
so
sure.
We explained to them.
or Popo.
Popo. Yeah. We'd explain to them why we were burning in the park.
Right.
And so they, you know, basically we got permission to burn over time. So the thing about the city with our city is it's a street crew. That is the parks department. So when we got T-pads at C2, you'll see they're 10 by 10. They told me they were 12 by 8. I said, well, that's great. Then he goes, well, it turns out they're 10 by 10, but that's what you're getting. And those are the exact words. And I said, okay. And 10 by 10, they're street sections. Literally brought out street forms to build the park. So when they come out to work, they break stuff. They're an army. It's like you get what you pay for, right? They're going to run over tee pads and break them. There's cracked tee pads out there. There's just trees will get knocked down. So we tend to kind of be cautious in our requests. And then we also have this autonomy that we're able to be responsible adults, manage our park work, and impress the community. So at the end of the day, we try not to engage the city. Mm. And we've maintained this great relationship with them by just keeping them in the loop. So
that's great.
But in your situation, it's a lot different. You have a budget, but you have great communication. Mm-hmm. So Delwood, that park is a dream for most people, right? But it's challenging, you know, that dealing with the cities. The key is that you have to make sure that they feel invested. And then you have to demonstrate that you're bringing people to the community. And if they don't know that, you know, if, like tournaments that collect receipts, mind blowing when you do that. Mm-hmm. Turn in those receipts, show them $11,000 in transactions over a weekend, blows their mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and they know that if you get the right audience, but I prefer not to. I like autonomy.
Yeah, there's something to be said for Delwood and how it's set up and how much the Parks Department does. But there's also something to be said for Camden too, where you're out on hole 7 and it feels like you are in nowhere.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and that's
a country club.
Yeah, yeah. Something you don't get from a Delwood or an in town type of place. So you got to play the give and take game.
Yeah. Absolutely. So. It is. And at the end of the day, you know, it's a very special place, Delwood, but you have these other problems, right? Yeah.
Right.
Volume of people, you have that. So, you know, it's what you get what you have. And we're lucky. Camden 2 is hard enough. We have Camden 1 on site. So people like to tend to, you know, play Camden 1 because it's a little more straightforward.
Which is also very fun.
Enjoyable course.
Which is great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And where Camden 2 tends to generate a little more of that higher caliber player, we don't get the volume. So it's a country club.
Mm-hmm.
It's a private course,
right?
Essentially.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So we've covered a lot, and I think we've covered a lot of the stuff that we wanted to get to, but more importantly, we covered things that we didn't really plan to get to, which I love.
Yeah.
But I think it's time we get in the mailbag.
Is it?
Isn't it?
Do you feel like it is?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you get us in there?
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Jason Callahan, take us into the mailbag.
That was very smooth.
I certainly will. Thank you.
No, I mean, the whole mail, we did great.
Yeah. We did great.
Overall, very smooth.
Very nice. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to start off with a David Hopkins question.
Hoppy.
All right.
How many different games have you made up involving discs, and what is your favorite?
is he referencing something that he knows that we don't?
Yeah, I think I've been made up about 7 games. My first game in the Quad Cities was Dunk Tank, and that's where we are in the pavilion. It's raining really hard, and we putt at the basket 45 feet away, and you just can't get skunked. Lowest point chases.
Okay.
So if you get skunked, you're chasing all the discs, you get soaking wet, everybody else is dry. Dunk Tank. Baseball.
Ooh, love it.
Tank. Nice.
Love it.
Baseball is a great game. It's 4-on-4. You have 4 putters. We actually, for speed of play, we'll play with 3. If you make 3 in a row, you get the 4th to get your home run. Makes sense? You can make 4 to make a home run. But you have a pitcher who's pitching against you. So if the pitcher makes it and you miss, you're out as the batter. Ties go to the runner. runner advances, pitcher stays at home plate. It's weird. They pitch from home plate. This game is so great, and it's so energetic and so high level of, hey, batter, batter.
Yeah.
A lot of energy. They've franchised it to Minneapolis. In Burlington, the kids in Burlington beat us 2 years in a row. Love you guys. The amateurs. So anyway, we lost to them. They franchised it. So everybody who plays this game absolutely goes nuts for it.
Fun as hell.
It does.
So many games. Godfather is a version of Wolf where you can knife the boss. You pick your own gangs. If you've ever played Wolf, it's just Wolf with picking your own gangs. And you can throw in from 100 feet, car bomb you. So there's all kinds of ways to like become the boss. So CTP gets a point, but the boss is whoever gets the last word. So if whoever makes the biggest shot on the hole becomes the boss, but the person who gets CTP still gets their point. So it's Wolf with fun. And you get to strategically pick your gang to make sure that you don't pull somebody in that has more points. We do 3-on-3. The Amazing Race, where you putt to different stations with three putters. But if you miss all three, you have to run and chase them and go back to the start. If you make one, you run ahead and move to the next station. We had like 20 stations. Al Hermosillo had me knocked out, three stations beat. I was three stations behind. I went 1, 2, 3, one up, one down, and passed him to beat him on the last station. Because he
always
missed
love
three.
A good beat Al Hermosillo story.
Man, that game had us wheezing because none of us are in shape. No, thank you, David. That's my favorite thing to do is invent different games to invent energizing activities that people get excited about and want to do.
That's cool.
Hell yeah.
My Joliet game, Tap In, you put two putters on one, like the putter's down, the other one's over the top. You flick bottle caps off the top of the putters into the, we call it Tap In. Angela Del Sasso, we had like a tournament and everybody lined up and down the picnic table and she smoked us all. I got into the finals with her. She beat me so bad. She talked shit the whole time. And we have it on video. Yeah. And we have it on video where she just dominated us. So several games. Thank you, David.
Yeah.
Next question. I might butcher this guy's last name. Jason Lequesney.
How do you spell it?
Lequesne.
Sure.
I don't know.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Jason Lequesney. I'm sure I do, but I didn't.
He says most people don't realize, but Chris can putt with either hand. Are you ambidextrous with any other sports and activities? Like, can you write with both hands?
Yes. And I did post to his reply, me writing my autograph at the same time with both hands.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's kind of a parlor trick, but I dribble left, shoot right, throw left, bat right.
What hand do you brush your teeth with?
That was better than what I thought you were going to ask.
That's what he was asking.
Okay. It's my left hand then.
It's secret code.
You'll
sometimes
get there.
The stranger brushes my teeth.
Perfect answer.
Yes. And he's done it. There's the home run.
Grab mine. It's sitting right there.
We got a question from Ryan Stilson.
Surprise.
He wants to know where the best places to hunt rocks in the QC area.
Camden 2. I found two spearheads, three arrowheads. When I broke up all the creeks, I spent 1,000 hours breaking up the creeks because, of course, the ravines were 60 years of debris and they built up a lot of quicksand. So people would lose their shoes. They wouldn't realize what was happening. They'd be up to their knees and it was just an awful experience. So I went in, broke up all the dams, got all the stuff draining out, started finding the most amazing fossils, arrowheads, artifacts. It's all glacial drift in addition. So Camden 2 is fantastic.
All right. And I got another question from Rich Klein. And I think actually I could probably open this up to everybody. Do you find yourself leaning more towards the risk or the reward when stepping up to one of those shots?
The risk. Yeah. I'm risk averse. I think when I was younger, I was a lot more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But as I play more, my competition is clearly more aggressive than I am. So it's the contrast between their aggression and my risk tolerance is pretty strong. It's hard for me to take ungodly risks. The anxiety is too high. So I tend to take safer shots these days. And part of that's confidence too. You know, I went to a couple tournaments, super confident. And that intersection between confidence and ability is challenging.
Sure. Finding where it lies.
So it's interesting to see guys being a risky, but yeah, I tend to be a little more safe-minded. I try to avoid three putts. I don't like to bogey.
I don't ever really think about my play from a competitive standpoint because I don't compete much these days. So
yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
If it is achievable for me to run this shot that I have, I'm going to. Mm-hmm. Because it's too tasty. It's like another bite of food that tastes really good. I'm gonna throw my putter on that tight gap and
the downside. There's no downside.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Looking at it like if I get a bogey, I bogey. But it's fun for me to chase after the
right.
Yep.
Reward of it.
Yeah. And I'm not out second place money if I run this and miss it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my favorite rounds, honestly, I play so much golf, but if I could just play one round of golf every day for the rest of my life, it would be with my son, who just thinks I'm amazing no matter how my shots go. I could throw the worst shot and he's just like, "You're so amazing." Mm-hmm. And like with my family, I relax, I enjoy it. I'm not tense. I could care less. I throw rollers, I throw backhand. I just have a blast. Yeah. It's so relaxing. And I just look forward to that. I crave it. And that's because I'm the opposite. I just play too much competitive golf. Right. Everything's competitive. I can't take fun shots. Nothing's fun.
Right.
But when I'm playing with my family, I'm like, "Oh man, I can do whatever I want." Sky's the limit. And it makes it enjoyable. And so I do crave those kind of rounds.
Yeah.
If there's no stakes involved, I'm going to take the risky shot every time.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm. Even low stakes. Like, well, let me put it this way. If it's a tournament and I really want to compete, I'm going to play safe like almost every time. If, let's say, it's leagues, Monday night, I don't really care where I finish. KLM, hole 6, I'm going to throw the outside sidearm and try to skip it off the sidewalk, which is like, it's like a 1 or 2 out of 10 odds of me hitting it, but I try it every week because if it happens, it's going to be dope.
Yeah.
But usually it just doesn't work out for me.
No, fun factors, huge. Yeah.
Or, you know, if it's a skins match against Kenny Slauson and you're just destroying him, embarrassing him, humiliating him for, you know, his complete existence, you might take a little fun shot every now and then.
Not that you would do that.
Yeah. I would, if recently, that happened, that's what I would do.
Right.
Like if it was hole 11 at Delwood, June 6th.
Recently.
2022, around noon, you're up, you know, 8 or 9 skins. You know, you might try to sidearm it through the trees.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Just hypothetically.
That was a very specific hypothetical. Interesting.
Sounded very precise.
All right. Speaking of hypothetical situations, we have some emails that were sent in as well. That's a perfect segue, by the way. We have some people that emailed questions. So
I don't know how hypothetical this question is, but we will try it out anyway.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is segues that don't exist.
Oh, and I saw that coming a mile away.
Yeah.
So this question is from just recent past guest of the show, Mike Strauss.
Professor Mike Strauss.
I know that dude.
If you haven't listened to that one.
From the last episode.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
You were in the parking lot earlier.
You were in the parking lot earlier. That's how I know you.
He says, first of all, great job on what you did with Camden 2. And thank you for all the hard work and passion you put in over the years. What were the early visions of the course and how did you come about designing that track? We spoke about quite a bit of that. Also, what was it like back in the early OG days on the Huck Lab team with the other guys? I remember a video from over 11 years ago on Disc Golf Live, you showing them the backwards overhead putt and all of you hanging out around the RV. Awesome job on the podcast, guys. Keep it up. Mike Strauss.
So one of my first sponsors besides Innovo was Huck Lab. So Jay Harbour and I became good friends in 05. I was a mixed doubles world champion with Angela Chickfry. We ended up getting put on the Huck Lab team. And that was actually a really exciting development for me because he was friends with Dave Monk, who was with Salomon Sports. And that was my first real sponsorship I felt. I was getting 10 pair of Gore-Tex shoes a year, jackets I couldn't afford. That was when I thought the sport was really
going. Oh, that's the pinnacle.
Going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The problem was that it was very, it was a enthusiast that was part of Salomon. And so Salomon as a company wasn't fully invested in disc golf or even aware of what was going on. So we had this enthusiast that was inside the company. So it was really great. He ended up moving on to Keen. Keen became a big deal for disc golf. So Dave's done amazing things for disc golf. That was one of the coolest things. So Huck Lab, for me, is a family. Iron Lion. I'm on Team Iron Lion since 07, Huck Lab since 05. These are like my family teams, you know, the local, like Chase and Jess, who look after me as a player. You know, Jay, when I was out on tour, was like, what do you need? What can I do for you? You know, like looking out for me, like, can I be a friend while you're on the road? That manager type, you know, like, where, you know, do you need MapQuest? Can I print some for you? Can I get you directions? Yeah, just, you know, he was looking out for me and that was neat. And so I really love those guys. So. Huck Lab's one of my faves.
I am aware that Huck Lab exists because I've seen their stamps on discs. Honestly, I don't really know what is Huck Lab, and I'm sure a lot of listeners don't. Can you give us a quick, like, what is Huck Lab?
Yeah, I mean, they were basically just doing promotions, running tournaments, a lot like you guys do, Sean. Just promoting the sport, selling product, putting some – they had stylish clothes. That was their thing. They were putting out some styles that nobody else had. So they're a little bit at their time, kind of that Portland grungy kind of thing going on. And Jay was into, he was a kayaker. He was a kayak instructor. He fell in love with disc golf, kind of like you did with skating, falling disc golf. And like, it was a no brainer. He's just a great guy. Love the team. Love, you know, and it was Nate Doss, Dave Philberg, Avery Jenkins, Angela Chick-Fry, Robbie Bratton, Val. A lot of us were just on the team, but it was a, it's just nice to be on the road. When you're on the road, just like having that manager type, that people looking out for you, that's key. And it was big, you know, it's hard for them to look out for every player, but you need a small sponsor sometimes. Just someone who's kind of that familial, you know?
Sure.
Dope. Oh, you didn't think that was awesome?
trying new adjectives.
Well, if you keep shocking him every time he says
right,
it.
Right, exactly. We'll get him to stop. No, that is the end of the mailbag sesh.
That's a good mailbag.
It was a great mailbag.
Nothing about my tick bite. That's good. The first question I got.
Tick bite?
No, you don't want to see it.
I want to put a picture of it in the album.
Like, we're kind just of into weird shit, man. Happened?
Yeah.
Or is this many moons?
I'll show you sometime.
is this a trick to get us to look at your butt cheeks?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
Oh, it's on. Oh, I see.
It is where you think it is.
Yeah.
I promised I wouldn't show you guys on air, but if you want to see it.
Not now.
Not now. Thinking good.
Good.
Yeah. I'll imagine. I would also like to present a new segment.
Please.
I would like to call it the farewell segment.
Ooh.
We have two people that are leaving our disc golf community. They are alive. It's not that kind of farewell.
They're going to heaven.
They're going to Texas.
Oh, well.
Clayton and Bree Kaufman have, they said goodbye like 25 times.
Several times.
Over the last 6 months.
Several times.
But this last one, Bree was crying and it broke my heart. They are super sweet people. Mm-hmm. And I believe listeners of the show, we wish them all of the luck in Texas. Mm-hmm. And we hope that the disc golf scene down there knows that they're getting really, you know, two incredible people.
Yeah.
Farewell to Clayton. And Bree Kaufman.
And they'll be back up to visit and play some stuff. But
can't wait to hear what kind of music you put behind that.
Oh, some real sappy shit.
Yeah, you got something.
Slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
I love that segment and want to hear more of that. It's a good idea.
Yeah, I want more people to leave so we can hear that segment.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Let's start banishing people from the community.
It's the start of a serial killer right there. Nobody's left in a while. I got to start killing people. Get them out of here.
It's got morbid.
Segments.
It's all about the segments. All right, Chris, this was so badass.
Good for you.
Yeah. It was there. It was in the back of your
throat.
It was
coming the wrong way.
Badass.
Yeah. No, I wasn't even close to saying it that time.
It was bossum.
I think that's the name of the episode.
Yeah.
Bossum.
Not bad. Yeah, it was really cool just to hear, you know, sort of the tales from the old days and what you have put into Camden and how the sport has evolved over time. It was a fantastic conversation.
Got to know where you came from before you can know where you're going.
That's
Right. Shout out to Sheila for, again, bringing us a great guest and setting up another great episode. I doubt this will be the last time we do this with you. And thanks again, man. This was awesome.
All right, really enjoyed it.
It's been awesome for me as well.
Great. It really has been awesome. Like, yeah, if you really think about
really
it.
Really awesome.
Awe-inspiring.
Totally awesome.
Oh.
All right, guys. Listeners, I hope you guys enjoyed this one. We had a lot of fun.
It's awesome.
Until next time,
let's
keep it on the fairway.
See ya.
Goodbye.
Good night.
Peace.
Look closer when you get there.
Unstable Discourse is a Top Secret Studios production.